views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good morning. This is Kenny Hendricks, and this is Change Matters, and it is Tuesday, June 28th. I'm here in Dallas, Texas.
And I am Colette Williams, and I am here in sunny, southern, humid California, Los Angeles, California. It is 8 a.m., and this is Change Matters, and today we are going to change up our show. And we're going to talk more about the new black consciousness, which is a subject near and dear to my heart, as well as Ken. And we're going to start off with Ken. You go ahead and lead us into the conversation, Ken.
You know, something I've thought about for a long time is with regard to a new black consciousness is where we are as a people and how do we get to the next chapter, or how do we move forward? In the 50s and 60s, we had some movement in terms of progress in being accepted in this country and doing a lot of positive things. African Americans were able to get better jobs. There are a lot of union jobs, particularly in areas like Detroit, Chicago, and those areas. Even out on the West Coast, people were able to do a lot of things that they had not been, previous generations had not been able to do. We made a significant amount of progress. Of course, we had the civil rights movement of the 60s and into the 70s. And into the 70s, we had the black nationalist movement, so the black power movement. And again, a lot of things were going on. And since about the 2000s, it seems that that type of progress is not happening anymore. That's not to say that everything has stopped in its tracks, but the types of I guess I want to say across the board progress that we had been seeing kind of stopped. Individuals began making progress. Individuals are still making progress, and you have certain pockets that are making progress. But as a whole, looking at where we are as a people, where do we go from here, I guess, is the question. And I think we need to look at developing a new black consciousness. You know, we call this program Change Matters. Change does matter, but we also have to have solutions. So we're looking for solutions, and we want people to call in and talk about what they think we need to do. And we're going to give some ideas on the types of things that we need to do with regard to developing a new black consciousness. We need to start embracing things like education. We stopped embracing education some years ago. You know, we don't have the numbers in terms of people graduating from colleges that we used to have. As a whole in our community, we seem to have lost that. We need to find out where we can pick that up and how we pick that up. Now, Colette is involved with the educational system in the LAUSD and probably has some thoughts about what we do there and what are some of the issues there that we can address. And how do we begin the dialogue and talking about education, changing the way that we think, changing the way we interact with each other, things like frequenting black businesses, and when you frequent black businesses, doing it in a manner that, you know, you're not asking for the hookup, not asking for a discount, pay them just as if you go to a mainstream white business. You know, all those things are critical in moving our community forward, supporting each other nonstop, being respectful as one another. And those are the types of things that on the whole we want to talk about and find out how do we begin that dialogue? How do we get there? How do we get there from here?
Well, Ken, you started out great, and I'm glad you did, because as you know, that's something that's also near and dear to my heart, education. And with that, I see so much on a daily basis. School has started for the summer session, and I'm looking at kids who come in to the school who need to take summer sessions. Now, summer school here in LA is only for those who have to repeat a course. So they've either gotten a D or they have failed the course. So they have to take summer school. You'd be surprised at the number of students who are not showing up. You'd be surprised at the number of students who have to repeat, who walked across the stage to graduate. In the face of graduation, we had a parent call in and say, my son graduated, but I got a letter saying that he has to go to summer school to make up a course. And she wanted to argue. But the boy was able to walk across the stage and pretend as if he graduated. He pretended that he graduated. That is okay. And I can't tell you the staggering numbers that we have where kids walk across the stage, but they have not really graduated. They can't get a diploma.
Is that part of that? You know, like now kids, when they play soccer, everybody gets a trophy. What are they called? The not harming anyone's self-esteem. Is that all that
right.
Part of that? Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, that's a backfire. That's a backfire. That's a misstep. My daughter went to a program last week, and I don't know if they call it restorative justice or not. They may call it restorative justice. But what this gentleman talked about was in 5 years, there will be no such thing as suspension. And we operate that way here. So, which means the short of a gun, students are not suspended. Fighting, using very foul language, using drugs, it doesn't matter.
So
sex
it teaches
in
them,
the hall.
It teaches them that there are no consequences to their actions.
There are absolutely no consequences to their actions. And I do mean none. And what this man has done is he talks about the fact that beginning in elementary school, it starts there in elementary school when kids are suspended for their behavior. From there, it escalates. At middle school, they're suspended for their behavior. High school, they're suspended for their behavior. And thus, the pipeline into prison. Now, I want to really have a conversation with him because I do not see that. I've done research here. What actually happens, and it's a known fact, it's in black and white, prisons are built based on the number of third graders that do not read.
Third grade.
California has the highest number of prisons, thus the highest number of prison inmates. Okay? So if you tell a kid, or if you demonstrate that a kid, all he's going to get is a tongue lashing, talk to, maybe got to pick up the trash, he can deal with that. He'll get over it. But there is no more suspension. None. So kids do what they want to do because just like they tell us, what you going to do? You can't do nothing. They know it. They understand it, they mean it, and they continue to do what they do because there are no consequences. So when they finally graduate from high school, whether it is the traditional graduation or not, when they finally leave the protection of the high school, they get out there and the very same thing applies. There will be consequences out there, because out there in the real world, you become just like everybody else. That kid becomes just like everybody else. So kids don't have to embrace education. One, because it isn't necessary. They can skate along, do what they want to do, and get what they think they need to get, whether it is a quality education or not. They can skate and do what they want. I have seen things in my years here at this particular school that I've never seen anyplace else. I've just never seen anyplace else. Yesterday, we are enrolling kids in school, and a kid happened to walk around my table. The kid was absolutely, he must have bathed in herbs. He must have bathed in it. I'm sure he ate it. I'm sure he drank it, and he absolutely smoked it, because I immediately turned around and said, get him. There were three of them, and it just about knocked me over.
You know, there was a program not too long ago, probably 3 to 5 years ago, that someone started to pay kids to get good grades.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And there was some controversy about that, because, you know, why would you pay someone to do what they're supposed to do? And I totally get that. But I think I think the problem is, in other neighborhoods, when kids go to school, they see a light at the end of the tunnel. I'm going to go to school, I'm going to get a good education, and I'm going to get a good job. I'm going to be able to go to college, and I'm going to get a good job. I think in other communities, they see that. And I think in our community, that our kids don't see that light at the end of the tunnel. They don't see that.
No, they don't.
They say, well, why should I do it? Because, you know, nobody's going to give me a job anyway. And that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
Because
absolutely,
they conduct themselves in a manner where, no, nobody wants to hire you because you're uneducated and you act a certain way. Because they've been told that no matter what happens, they're not going to be able to succeed anyway. And I think, and I think some people are going to argue with me about this, but I think, you know, years ago, and you, I'm sure you recall this, Colette, back in the 50s and 60s, it was very hard to make any progress in this country. But a lot of that has changed. It's nowhere near perfect, and it's never going to be perfect. We are never going to be seen as absolute equals in this country. But I think we forgot to tell our kids, yes, you can be anything you want to be, but remember there are going to be obstacles. I was watching a program probably back in the 90s, some MTV or BET type program with teenagers on it, and it was all black kids, and one girl said she was going to go to college and get a degree and become a contributing member of society. And another girl stepped back and looked at her and said, why? They ain't going to let you do anything anyway. So, you know, whether or not, you know, there are going to be obstacles in life, you know, and so we need to begin teaching our children that they can do anything they want to do, but they also need to be cognizant that they're going to be hurdles. And that you, in order to get past those hurdles, you've got to persevere, and you just have to keep on trying and keep on trying and keep on trying, and don't let them keep you down, because there are ways to do it.
Absolutely. And not only are we looking at kids who think and feel that they are not going to give you a job anyway, but they have to look at those who are members of their own families who, for whatever the reasons are, one, either didn't graduate from high school or barely graduated from high school and do not embrace education, never went to college, never thought about college. College was not for them. They chose a very different path. You would be knocked off your feet to know the number of kids, one, here, who were in foster care or group home. Two, they are the very first member of their families to graduate from high school. Definitely first members to even approach college. So we're looking at a community that is very, very much like the plantation. And yep. I've mentioned to you multiple times, especially when I come back here to LA, I look down the street and I swear, I'm telling you, this is a plantation. This is a plantation. And someone just said the other day that the keepers of the plantation are allowing a new rail system to go down the major boulevard. That would not happen anyplace else but here. That would not happen. And again, there was a discussion about a project that's going on. And the discussion was about allowing blacks to bid on portions of this project and also work on the new rail system. There are no blacks on the project, on the multi-million dollar project. There are no black folks on the rail system. But it is business as usual. Nobody is saying, look, we're here, we're capable, we're educated, we're engineers, we are construction workers, we can do both. It's not happening, and it ain't going to happen. And again, as long as there is a way to keep folks from becoming a part of this, it's going to happen. It's going to happen, and nobody's going to say anything. When we have students who come in and feel like they don't have to do anything, they're not going to do anything. When students come in and feel like all I need to do is get a D, that's all they get, a D. And as you said, Ken, this is a self-fulfilling prophecy. In their heads and in their minds and in their families and communities, nothing happens. So why should anything happen any different? Why should it be any different?
Do you recall... I remember during the 80s and 90s, and it was always said that there are no good black role models. They kept talking about no good black role models, and I got so sick of hearing that because there have always been role models. And the problem right. is the problem is that we look for role models in the wrong place. You know, yes. we look at athletes, we look at entertainers and things mm-hmm. like that. We really, really need, and this part is on us, and I completely agree with what you're saying about the blacks not getting the contracts with the city to do the work mm-hmm, on the rail. Mm-hmm, but in terms of our community, and we can work on that. In terms of our community, what can we do to start bettering ourselves? And part of that is to start showing real role models, not the athlete that makes, you know, $50 million a season, not the Kanye West and the Ushers and the Beyoncés. That's fine if you're looking for that line of work. But the average person needs to figure out how to make it from day to day and make this something of themselves. The people, you know, the guy who works at, you know, Bank of America as a loan officer, you know, who lives in the suburbs and is a good father, and is a good citizen, is a role model. It does not have to be somebody that's out there in the public eye. You know, the guy that works at the post office who's been there for 20 years. You know, he's a good husband and father. He takes right. care of his community. Mm-hmm. He takes care of his mm-hmm. home. He takes care of his family. He's an excellent role model. He's a better role model than the ones we see, and that's on us. And things aren't going to change for our community until we begin to change it ourselves. We've got to show some change. I always go back to Ferguson. In Ferguson, Missouri, again, 70% black community with a white mayor who would run two or three times unopposed, you know, and a city council that was 90% white. Mm-hmm. You know, how can you cannot control your destiny as long as you allow other people to control it for you. You know, right. You have no room to complain. You have to get involved. You have to start taking care of your own. You know, in small, in smaller communities like that, it's much easier than somewhere like a Los Angeles or New York or Dallas or Chicago or something like. And start in the small communities. Get involved. And I really, really implore people to get involved in local politics. Get involved, whether it's the city council, whether it's the school district. Get on the board. Start doing those things, because we're the only ones that are going to be able to do it. Nobody's going to change it for us.
No.
And I'm going to say this, and I'll let you talk. And you have to say this for time. Stop waiting on permission, people. Stop waiting on permission.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's what we do. We wait for the man, so to speak, to tell us what to do, when to do it, where to do it, why to do it. And then when he tells us, one, it ain't good enough, he tells us, and we're mad, he tells us, and we don't move. So we are definitely, without question, dealing with post-slavery syndrome in our communities.
Oh, absolutely.
Post-slavery syndrome is rampant through the Black community. If you look back, Ken, remember when we were kids, Tom Bradley was the mayor of Los Angeles.
Right.
And he was mayor of Los Angeles for something like, I don't know, 14, 15, maybe even 16 years, a very long time.
Right.
I don't believe there's been another Black man as mayor of the city of Los Angeles. In fact, I know it hasn't.
No, there hasn't.
Been Richard Reardon, Antonio Villaraigosa, Antonio Villaraigosa, how in the world did anybody ever allow that to happen? Villaraigosa and Smorch or whatever were mayor and governor at the same time. Both of them were jokes. And I'll never forget the day, Prop 189, I believe it was, 189, was on the ballot. And it was about illegals coming into the Los Angeles community, giving rights. And
I think that's just real quickly, that's become a derogatory term, illegals. So,
we may have
some Hispanic listeners who.
Right. We don't want to insult anybody.
Umbrage.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Go ahead.
Thanks for reminding me of that. Mm-hmm. But that 187, it was either 189 or 187. But when the people gathered, they walked across the First Street Bridge. Who was front and center? The mayor, with all of his comrades. The mayor was over 100,000 people crossing that bridge, all Hispanic descent. And it was the most incredible sight. They walked across that bridge. They made a statement. And Antonio Villaraigosa was right there with him, front and center. Now, he's supposed to be neutral. He is not at all supposed to participate in that kind of a rally, but he did. And he ran for mayor and won two terms. The first term he ran, got all his votes. The second term, as the news reported, he ran unopposed. He got 157,000 votes. So he won by default. Nevertheless, he won.
He ran unopposed?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Wow.
And I'll never forget, I got back here and the news was reporting he won. He ran unopposed and he won by default. And the news reported nobody voted. He got 157,000 votes.
That's nothing
how in
but
the
a,
world?
That's that, nothing but yeah, a neighborhood in L.A.
That's it. It's just a neighborhood. And guess what? He got all of the votes. He was mayor again. And while he was mayor, he had a tawdry affair. It was public. His wife went public with his affair.
With
the newscaster. Mm-hmm. And no matter what he did, he still stayed in that seat. He still stayed in that seat. And he was not at all a quality mayor. He didn't bring quality into Los Angeles. So when you think of Los Angeles, the city that it is, you would think that people would have more substance, more glue to the fabric of the community. And it doesn't happen that way. That's one of the reasons I have just really had it with sunny Southern California, because the glue that used to keep us together, it's washed away. It has washed away in the education system, in our community, in families, just across the board, straight across the board. I'm interested in quality. I want to see kids get a quality education. There's more infighting in the education system. And I told my former husband probably 30 years ago, he was a teacher for 37 years, and I told him 30 years ago, this is not about kids and education. This is not at all about kids and education. And he and others would argue that. They no longer argue that, because it's written all over the place, at every school, at every school district office, with the administrators, with the folks who sit in the seat. If you ever watch a board meeting, the board meeting is not about students. It's about the ancillary things. It's about the money that's being spent. It's about the lack of money. It's about other ways of getting money. It's about too much money being spent on things that the board feels are wasteful. Now, there are board members who may not have ever been in the trenches at a school, but they sit on the seat. They have a seat, and they're able to determine what happens at a school, the schools in their districts. So I don't want to get off on that, because that's another tangent. That's something else that gets me.
Yeah.
But we go ahead.
No, I say, so how do we, you know, and I think there's a lot. There are no single answers. I read something the other day that said, for every complex and complicated problem, there's a simple answer that is wrong. So anybody looking for a simple answer is absolutely wrong. There are no simple answers.
I don't think there are any simple answers. I really don't. And if there were simple answers, we'd have them.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd have them. Go ahead.
I think people need to, you know, again, the dialogue. I think people need to talk. I think people need to understand that, you know, again, change has to come from within. And we have to affect that change. You know, we have to stop thinking like we're on the plantation. Mm-hmm. It is okay to leave the plantation. It is okay to do something different. I had an occasion before I left California. I worked with a girl who, this was in the 80s when everybody started moving out east to the Inland Empire, down mm-hmm. to San Bernardino, Moreno Valley. And she had a friend who had moved out to that area, and she had visited her friend. Well, the friend's sister was also there, and they were from the city. And so the friend saw that the sister had a Cuisinart on her kitchen counter and said to her, "What do you think, you white now? You move way out here and then you got a Cuisinart?" You know, as if just having a Cuisinart is only for white people. Moving out of the city is only for white people. You know,
I still get that stuff.
Yeah,
I still get that stupidity.
It's a slave mentality that people are afraid to leave the plantation. It's okay to move to other places. It's okay to do all these different things. Yes, and those are the things that we as a people don't do, and we need to start doing. When I used to do a lot of traveling for business, going through airports, I would see very, very few black families traveling together. I'd see white families, I'd see Asian families, I'd see some Hispanic families, but very few black families.
Well, you know? Even now, I you know how often I'm on a flight,
mm-hmm.
and it's the same thing today. And we have someone who's close to us who says, "Oh, I'm not going to fly. I'm not going to fly. Mm-mm. I'm not going to fly."
Right.
And when I talk about flying from here, when I go somewhere, it's a big deal. It is a big deal.
So we are at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to go ahead and take a short break. This is Change Matters Solutions, and we will be right back.
Listening to Change Matters Solutions on Black Talk Radio, hosted by Kenny Hendricks and Colette Williams.
Welcome back to Change Matters. I am Kenny Hendricks.
And I am Colette Williams, and thank you for joining us. And as we move into our dialogue, I want to remind all of you that we will be going live streaming on Tuesday, July 5th at 11 a.m. Please join us. We have got lots and lots to talk about. We've got a few guests coming in, and we want to hear from you. We want to hear your thoughts. We want you to join in on this dialogue. Change matters. We are talking about solutions. We're talking about things that matter most in our families, in our homes, in our communities, in society, in this country. Change matters. So please join us. Join us next Tuesday, live at 11 a.m. And this is a podcast, so you'll be able to listen to us at your leisure. But we are going live, as I said. Join us. Call in. Talk to us. Let us know how you feel. Let us know what's on your mind. We are not even thinking about doing this on our own. We're not thinking about doing this without you. So please give us a call. Email us. Ken, what is that email address?
ChangeMatters99@gmail.com. Drop us a line. Let us know what you think. If you like something, let us know that. If you don't like something, let us know that. If you've got ideas for change, any thoughts on change and solutions, we want to hear from you. We are in the middle of an election season, and there's a lot going on, and we've been talking about it. And, you know, as I look at the election coverage, sometimes I ask myself, you know, what will change? We have two of probably the most unpopular candidates in we've ever seen. Donald Trump is at a 70% disapproval rate, and Hillary Clinton is around 55%. So neither are very good choices. But presidential elections have always historically been, at least in my lifetime, of choosing the lesser of two evils. You know, there's never the perfect candidate. I remember when Barack Obama was running, and I had a friend that I worked with who said, yeah, Kenny, I want to vote for somebody black, but Obama's not the guy. So I said, well, when's the last time you voted for the guy? I've never voted for the guy. I've always voted for the lesser of two evils. But it brings
and when
me
was
to,
the last time anybody had a African-American man to vote for?
Right. And one of the things, question as I ask myself and I think about our community, and I listen to, you know, the Black Lives Matter people and some of the pundits and some of the quote-unquote leaders in the community, you know, one of the things that's always on the top is always, we need jobs. We need jobs in the community. We need jobs, which is a valid argument. One of the questions I would ask the people in the community, the Black Lives Matter people, whomever they are, is if in fact jobs came into your community, whether it's LA, whether it's Baltimore, Ferguson, Chicago, Dallas, wherever it is, how many people in the community would be qualified for those jobs? You know, we have to ask ourselves, you know, we talk about change. Say for example, Microsoft decided to build a, you know, 15-story building in the middle of L.A., how many people could go to work for Microsoft that are from our community? My guess would be not very many. You know, so as we ask for these things, we have to make sure we are in a position to do a couple of things. One of them, we need to be in a position to take advantage of those things. So we cannot continue to say, bring jobs to our community, bring jobs to our community. But we're not putting ourselves in a position to qualify for those jobs. You know, we can educate ourselves. We can educate our children. We send our children to school, but they still need to be educated at home. You know, so one of the things, you know, Bernie Sanders' big thing was, and I think Hillary's talking about it too, free public education through college. Okay, if college were free, and Colette, let's take for example the school where you work. If college were free, how many of those kids would actually take advantage of it?
Not many.
See, so we can continue to ask for these things. And in my opinion, continuing to ask for those things is still waiting on permission.
Right.
You know, there are Pell grants, there are loans, there are a number of ways to get through college where it doesn't have to be free. And I'm not saying it shouldn't be free. That's another whole conversation. But the point being, we need to begin putting ourselves in positions where if we're going to ask for these things, that we are in a position to take advantage. And I'm going to finish with this, Colette, and I'll let you take over, is that the Black Lives Matter, one of the gentlemen, young men, who a few months back had an audience with Hillary Clinton, and she said, "I hear you. Tell me what you need me to do for you." He had no answer. He had no answer for her. And one of the things that I've learned from working in corporate America over these past 30 years is that you never go to a person of authority with a problem when you don't have an idea for a solution. So don't go to a Hillary Clinton, a Bernie Sanders, or whomever it is. Don't go and say, "Here's the problem, and fix it." You have to go, if there's a problem, find out a solution. Then you go to a person of authority and ask for help with the solution.
Right, and that's backwards. When you go to someone like that, you say, "Look, I have a solution for the problem." You don't go and say, "This is the problem." We know there's a problem. We know there's a problem. Let's not continue to talk about the problem. Let's go in head first and say, "Here's the solution for that. Here's the solution for that problem."
Yeah, and what can you do to help us get there? Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing that we don't do in our communities. That's the thing that we don't do. I think I mentioned before that from the U.S. Department of Education, there is annually upwards of $180 billion for financial aid.
Mm-hmm.
$180 billion. There are 7 representatives from the U.S. Department of Education who lead those offices and span out across the country delivering goods and information, how to access the money, workshops in all the schools and school districts in the country. They talk to principals and community leaders, churches, faith-based organizations, community organizations, nonprofits, on how to disseminate this information and how to get the money, how to access the money. Stop telling kids that you can only access the money one time a year based on the college or university. Stop telling them that, because that's not true, which means kids believe that if they don't get the money by a certain period of time, then if they don't file, then they don't get it. Not true at all. So there are myths after myths after myths that have been plaguing high schools because kids miss a deadline, or they miss a deadline that they think is a hard deadline, and they don't go back. So the money never gets spent. The money goes back to Congress. And what does Congress do it? Congress then turns around and they buy a $2,500 ashtray.
Okay. There was. Go ahead.
Which means the money never gets back to the schools. It never gets back to the schools. $180 billion cannot be spent. It's the same way with UNCF. They never spend all of the money. And if you remember, Bill Gates gave UNCF $100 million
Wow.
to be spent over a 10-year period.
And we're not taking advantage of it.
We're not taking advantage of it. I could go on and on about things that happen in this community with regard to education and furthering themselves in the jobs. Again, it's called post-slavery syndrome. I argued with one of our family members about genocide and how in the black community we have committed a self-imposed genocide.
Yes, we have.
He wanted to argue. And I said, it's clear. It's crystal clear. Argue about what? All it takes is looking at what has happened in what? In a decade, in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Can you actually say that we have made progress? You could, I guess, if Jay-Z and Beyonce are your ideas of progress.
Well, okay. And you and I have talked about this, and I know we're going to get a lot of pushback on this.
Let's get the pushback. I want the pushback.
But between the rap and the hip-hop culture, as they call it, you know, we have groomed a culture. We've sown a culture of gangsterism, whether they're real gangsters or wannabe gangsters, of denigrating our women, of this idea that the good life is about going out, becoming a rapper, and having these producers rent a yacht for you, put all these women on a yacht, and you got all these gold teeth and gold chains and everything. And then at the end of the day, you go back to the hood and you're nothing. And I always get this argument that, you know, white kids buy 70% of rap and hip-hop music. But the difference is those white kids are not trying to live the rap, hip-hop, gangster life. When they go home, it's Leave It to Beaver every time, because their parents are not going to allow that. Those kids are in college. You know, those kids see the light at the end of the tunnel. They know they're going to get a good education because it's going to be something happening at the end of it. Our kids don't see that. So then they try to become these rappers and hip-hoppers. And again, being a musician, I've seen the music industry just completely devolve into nothing. You know, it's a bunch of noise and... there's no, you know, half of the rap stuff that's out there, now, there's not even any instruments on there. It's just a beatbox and some little thing that makes noise, and then they go through all that. We need to get past that. And again, I'm sure we're going to get pushback on it, but it needs to be said, you know.
Right.
And you know, people need to stop and get introspective and look back and say, okay, what are we really doing? What are we really doing? Let me tell you a story. I've got a lot of anecdotal stories. And so I was listening to a guy on some radio show some years ago. And it was a white guy. And he was a white guy born in New Jersey and barely graduated from high school. Working class family, may have even been a single parent home, I can't recall. Working class family, and right out of high school, he got a job as a mechanic. And he just had resigned himself that, you know, that's what he was going to do. He had no college education, really didn't consider himself to be that bright, so he was just going to be a mechanic. He was pretty much happy with that. He was walking through New York City one day and saw the campus of NYU. And if you've ever been to NYU, it's a very beautiful campus. And he started walking through there, and he said, wow, I wonder if I could get into this school, just on a whim. So he went to the admissions office and started looking at things, and he saw, you know, the standard business degrees and educational degrees and things like that. And he thought, what if I try something that there's not a lot? He figured everybody's getting those degrees. Maybe if I tried something hardly anybody's doing. And the degree was in movies and television. And on a whim, he filled out the paperwork and got into the school and became a fairly successful movie producer. I don't know his name. He's not Francis Ford Coppola or anything like that, but actually was very successful in his job. And I listened to this story and I thought about it, and that's a complete mindset. Wealth is a mindset and poverty is a mindset.
Yes, you know, it is.
And so what is this saying? Whether you think you can or can't, you're right.
Right.
Whichever one
absolutely.
You think, you're absolutely right. There was nothing in this man's background that said that he was going to be able to do that. Now, I'm sure I'll get pushed back and say, well, so he's a white boy. They can do that. Well, how do you know you can't? How do you know you can't do that? Spike Lee made his first movie all on credit cards.
Right.
How do you think Oprah Winfrey got to where she is? People had a vision. It doesn't have to be in entertainment or athletics. You know, most black people don't know that the CEO of American Express is Kenneth Chenault. I think he's actually retired now, but he was the CEO of American Express for years.
Right, that's right.
You know, if you look at, there's only two jobs in this country that a black man has not held. That's vice president and speaker of the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every black congressman, we've had black mayors, black governors,
right.
Private sector CEOs, senior VPs, everything. The gentleman that hired me at Wells Fargo Bank, you know, was a black vice president. You know, he and I became very good friends. You know, those things can happen if people apply themselves. We have to get past this post-slavery syndrome. We have to stop thinking like slaves. We have to stop embracing poverty. You know, we have to see ourselves as successful. That's mm-hmm. the start. It's how you see yourselves. And mm-hmm. like we talked about on a previous show, expectations. We have to expect right. more from our children. Because whatever those expectations, that's what they're going to live up to.
And when we raise the bar,
exactly,
as I do, the bar, I'm very short, but I raise the bar so high sometimes I have difficulty seeing and reaching it. But I'm going to continue to raise that bar. So I raise the bar for everybody, and I want you to believe, listeners, I raise the bar so high. It's not unrealistic, because the bar is attainable. It's not at all unrealistic. I have very, very, very high expectations. I work with people who say they have high expectations, but as far as I'm concerned, and as I always say, the proof is in the pudding, and the pudding ain't at all solid. So we can talk expectation, but if you're not doing that, if you are at a place where anything goes, you don't set a standard, the culture is that you just do whatever, then your expectations are out the window. They don't exist. And people, it is time for us to have expectations of ourselves.
Yep.
I was on a bus, would you believe, and a woman was getting on the bus. She had bags and bags. Well, you could tell this woman was not completely in her bright mind, but she was well enough. She was older and well enough to move around by herself. Well, she had multiple bags. Well, sitting to the right of me was a guy who got on the bus. He looked like he was able-bodied. He was sitting in the seat to my right. Another kid got on the bus, and he was sitting in the seat across from me, in front of me. She walked around my education bucket, and she went to a seat in the back. Well, she put a real big suitcase down. She put that down, and she took everything else to her seat in the back. Well, the bus began to move. Well, as the bus is moving, she's coming back up to get her suitcase. Ken, tell me what happened at that point. Have you any idea? The woman was no bigger than me. This woman picked up her suitcase that was bulging.
Oh, and nobody helped her. Nobody helped her.
And nobody helped her. I kept my bucket from rolling, and all I could do was shake my head. All I could do, two able-bodied boys, who if you call them a boy, they're going to say, I ain't no boy. I'm a grown man. They never budged to help that woman. And all I could do was keep my bucket from rolling, because that would have been a disaster. She would have fallen over it. So I kept my crate from rolling so that she could lift. She lifted this suitcase over her head. They never moved. They never moved. One was school age. He was a high school kid. The other one, no telling what he was doing, probably nothing. They never, ever moved to help this woman. and I shook my head. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And if you say something to them, if you tell them they're not a man, they want to fight you.
Mm-hmm.
But they allowed that woman to pick up that, and she was struggling. I could not believe it. And we're talking about how we need to change what's going on in the Black community, in our families, a new Black consciousness. That right there, no conscience whatsoever. No conscience whatsoever. You are of the male species. You consider yourself a Black man, and you would let this Black woman, who is no doubt your elder, you would let her pick up that suitcase and lift it and roll it back to her seat.
We have in our community embraced the cool so much, we would rather be cool than educated.
Yep. And you know, that's a fact. We'd rather, because it's not cool to be educated. Mm-hmm. I was at the City Club last night, and I picked up a paper called The Outlook, and it is a local paper. Well, in the past month, each issue, which comes out, I believe, twice a month, each issue has two schools on the front. Well, the last issue, two schools, and it was students in their cap and gown, seniors. And there may have been about 150, 200 kids who are graduating. These kids are on the front page of this newspaper. And each section, one at the top and one at the bottom, those kids are stellar. And I hate to say it, white kids. Those kids, though, that picture is absolutely outstanding. When you see it, you automatically go to it. You automatically pick it up, because the way the kids are lined up, they have their caps and gowns on, they are poised, they're looking forward, they're doing what they're supposed to do. You look at that and you automatically say, that's a great looking class. In contrast, let me tell you what I have here. We had our senior pictures done. And let me tell you about my kids. Several kids had their hats on backwards. Two kids had their caps cocked to the side. One boy has on a black do-rag. Several girls have on, well, that's a conversation for another show. Several kids were looking away. You can tell that they're looking out the door. The kids are not seated in the way that they should be seated. They're staggered all over the place. You look at the senior class picture and you want to go, this must be a picture at a zoo. Because it, when you put that up against the two editions that I just recently saw, yesterday was Poly High School and Westridge. I looked at that and I went, what is it about my kids here, these kids, that they can't do this? And when I brought it to school here, we can't do like white kids. Yeah, I got that part. I got that part. Yeah, you can't. But you can't even at least have a decent showing? Really?
You know,
they can do this because they're white? I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think so. And folks, let's have an argument about that. Let's have a dialogue about that.
Exactly. I see people on Facebook. There will be, for example, a class of maybe 15 young black girls graduating from Harvard in law, or maybe there's 10 young black men graduating from West Point or some other Ivy League school. And people will post this on Facebook and say, and they'll say, you know, there's some good verbiage about it. Then they'll say, you'll never see this in the media. And my response to them is that, why should that be in the media?
Right.
They don't say when white kids graduate from Harvard or West Point, it's not in the media. The problem is that should not be the exception.
That should be the norm.
That should not be newsworthy that we have a graduating class out of Harvard, of black kids out of Harvard or West Point or Purdue. that should not be newsworthy. We need to try to get to a point where that's an everyday occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. and see, our mindset is, and see, that's back to waiting for permission, because they're saying, you never see that in the media.
Mm-hmm.
Really? You know, right. Again, why should that be in the media? Again, that's waiting on permission. If we want, see, we need to celebrate our successes. So let's celebrate our successes and stop waiting on somebody else to do it. And don't get mad when somebody else doesn't do it. That's not their job.
Right.
You know, it's our job to celebrate our successes, to show our kids that, yes, you too can be successful. You could be the next Barack Obama. You could be the next Cory mm-hmm. Booker. You could be the next Deval Patrick or Kenneth Chenow. Or, you know, you could be the next, you know, even, you know, and I watch a lot of the news shows, and I'm not sure if I should say either of the news shows, and if this, well, we're not on the air, so I can say CNN and MSNBC. You know, the Don, whether you like him or not, you know, the Don Lemons, the Joy Reids, Melissa Harris Perry, Kristen Welker, Karen Finney. I watch all of them, and Karen Finney is actually running Hillary Clinton's campaign right now. I see them all come through there. Absolutely brilliant journalists. You know, these people are out there, and black people are doing these things. Somehow this does not trickle down to these kids. They still think they can't do anything. And when you show them these people, you know, well, that's just him, or he does, he's a sellout, you know, and we have to get rid of that. If somebody's successful, they're a sellout mentality. We have to get past that.
Right.
You know.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just saying, because, you know, there's always been this difference between getting over and making it.
Mm-hmm.
And as
mm-hmm.
black people, I remember explaining at this one of these intellectual parties that mom used to have to some white lady the difference between getting over and making it. And I remember explaining that to her. And this was, you know, 40 years ago. But we've gotten to the point where all we want to do is get over. Making it is not given any credence mm. in our community.
Right.
And it has to be. We have to show that making it within the society can be a very good thing.
Right, right. And we want to somehow compare making it to a white standard. Why does that have to be a white standard?
Exactly.
Really? No, why can't it just be? Why can't it just be? We've made it. And remember, making it in the black community is not making it in all other communities. There's a difference between us making it and them making it. But why? Why? And why do we have to ask permission to make it, to be successful? Why do we have to ask for permission? And it goes back to what you say constantly. In our communities, we're waiting for permission to do. We're waiting for permission just to do. And it's time. It's past time. It's overdue. We're long overdue. I'll never forget the girl that said, "We're taking it back. This is our community. We're taking it back. You had your turn. It's ours now." And I won't say who she was, what she was, but her words to me were, "We're taking it back. We're taking it back. You had your turn and you blew it. You guys lost it. You were supposed to do something and you didn't." Well, we got folks on the stoop asleep. And while our folks are asleep, other folks are passing by. And we're looking up saying, "Oh, okay, go ahead."
Oh, what happened? You know, I told you about in the community, just the city just south of where I am outside of Dallas, there's a heavy influx of Indians. And I told you this, Colette. And I was in that area recently, and there was a sign. There's a new store, a grocery store that specializes in Indian goods. And it said, I think it's Patel Brothers, says, "Our food, our culture."
Mm-hmm.
And I remember looking at going, wow. They have come in here, built stores, built restaurants, basically commandeered that area. It's a very nice area,
mm-hmm.
you know, but they're saying our culture. they're not in your face. They're not trying to do anything aggressive or anything like that. But that'll be for the next show. And we are at the top of the hour again. This is Change Matters, and I am Kenny Hendricks.
And I am Colette Williams, and I want to thank you. We want to thank you for joining us. And remember, join us on Tuesday, July 5th at 11 a.m.
And is that 11 a.m. Pacific time?
That is 11 a.m. Pacific time. And Dallas time, that's 1 p.m. On the East Coast, it is
2 p.m. Yep.
2 p.m. So thank you very much for joining us. We could continue this for a long time, and that we will do. Join us again, and thank you very much. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Bye-bye, y'all.